yourself with whatever you're doing this afternoon whilst we have a chat with Morris Mizalowski, who's our business futurist here at 6BR. Morris joins us now. G'day, Morris.
Hey, Jason.
Now, look, Morris, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about most of all was, you know when you watch Star Trek and they're able to replicate things and you can say, I want a, well, in fact, I think this is on The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy as well, I want a hot cup of tea, and then it just suddenly appears like that. Is that something that we are going to see in the not-too-distant future?
Wouldn't that be wonderful if we could? The answer's yes, and we're really not far away from it, apparently, either. So what you're talking about is the realms of 3D printers and what are called 3D faxes. And both of those produce exactly what you've said. They look at an original object, whatever that may be. They make a copy of it. They do it either by laser beam or by some other mechanism. So they look at it, make a complete copy, and then they set a machine off somewhere else to replicate exactly what they've just seen in that copy.
So I could have a literally identical statue to Michelangelo's David.
You could, absolutely. Now, that would be too easy for them to do because you could do that right now.
Yeah?
So there's a whole lot of technologies that are rising. This isn't, I mean, like most things, this is a really interesting phenomenon. It's only been around since 2003 was the first lot of machines that we've seen. And there's been a lot of talk in the last 12 months because, like everything in technology, it's becoming better, faster, and more importantly, cheaper. So there are a number of machines that are just beginning to hit commercial reality, and they're beginning to do some really interesting things, including copying the Statue of David.
So really what we're talking about here is that things are really going to lose their value because we're going to be able to replicate them so easily.
Yeah, that's one way to look at it. But what it also will allow us to do is to have objects wherever we want them, whenever we want them. So what's being talked about, one of the case studies around this is instead of having to go out to a retail store and buy a dinner set, you know, you've got some people coming over for dinner, you're a couple of plates short, you can literally look onto a catalogue, so go online, choose your catalogue, choose the picture that you want, the style, the colours, do all of that, and then send that across to your 3D fax machine at home, turn it on, and within half an hour or so, you've got a complete dinner set ready to be used.
This really opens us up to a whole new level of piracy. I mean, we're copying music and movies now. Now we can even send designs for dinner sets around the place.
Well, it does. It absolutely does. And that's really always the human dilemma of this thing. You know, it's, as I say to you every week, it's that get smart philosophy. You can either use it for niceness or evilness. And we'll concentrate on the niceness and hope most people do. One of the ways that we'll get around it, of course, again, forgetting the human factor, putting in the human factor, but one of the ways we'll get around it is what will happen, that people will begin to own the license for the production of that thing. Much the same as they do now, the IP, the intellectual property of it. You will then own the rights to be able to say, this is how it should be made through the 3D fax machine, and that will become part of the new capitalist world that we live in.
Now, we talked about, you know, creating a teacup and perhaps a dinner plate and the Statue of David. Can you print me up some food?
We absolutely can. There's some really interesting devices. Now, one of them is a commercial food printer that's being trialled. One of the hotels I'm doing some work with, we're prototyping some of them, where we can send a recipe from anywhere in the world to any of the commercial kitchens, so Sydney, Tokyo, London, wherever, and each of those machines will simultaneously start up. They'll take the food, which is at the top. It's kind of like a 3D, it's kind of like an inkjet printer. And on the very top are vials, little tubes, and each of those tubes has food in it. So it has the various elements. It might have flour and eggs and those sorts of things in each of the tubes. What it does is it actually takes the right amount of ingredients from those tubes, drops it down into the middle section of this printer, and then it literally can chill, cook, store, or whatever else is required in that mechanism, so whatever else it needs to do. And at the end of it, you've got a perfectly replicated cake that looks the same everywhere around the world.
So if we had a master chef who, you know, basically was based in New York, and, you know, I'm not going to go to New York for some time, but I wanted to have some of his food, then potentially we could use 3D food printing so that I could taste his delicacies right here in Perth.
Absolutely. And that's the way it'll be about 15 years from now, let's say, 10, 15 years away. So again, you'll buy the license or the IP or whatever it becomes called, and it'll wear out of your machine at home that is used for cooking.
All right, I'm going to stretch you now.
Yes.
I know some, when I was going to high school, there was a girl who was doing some hurdles. She fell over one of the hurdles. And in fact, when she went and got checked out, what they discovered is that in her thigh bone, she actually had a cancer, actually in the bone itself. And so at her young age, they actually had to chop this bone out, and they went with an artificial one in there. Does this mean that we could basically sort of get a scan of her left-hand thigh bone, kind of invert it, and then build a right-hand thigh bone for her?
Well, we can, and the strange thing about that is we're kind of on that road already. In the last month, Washington State University has used 3D printers to do not exactly what you've just said, but certainly first steps towards doing it. So what they've created is what they call bone bridges. So they'll take a scan of either the deformed bones, which is still useful because it's the right type, shape and the rest of it, or from somewhere else in the body. And they build, again, what they've called a bridge, which are the embryonics of a bone. It's put into the human skeleton, and within a week or so, real bone starts growing around it, and within a couple of months, you've got a proper bone there built around it. But what's been put in is the right dimension, the right size of what's been missing. So first steps, and they're saying, again, we're about 10 to 20 years away from actually being able to print the bone itself and insert it into the human skeleton.
That's just incredible. I'm just blown away by the idea of the fact that we've reached a point in our technological evolution now that we can, we're the $6 million man, we can rebuild ourselves.
Well, we can. The $6 million man isn't $6 million, of course. It's about $100 million now.
At least. So what else is happening then in the world of 3D printing? I mean, we touched on making objects, we've touched on creating food and even body parts. Is there anything else clever that we can do with this tech?
I think we're really going to see a lot of stuff come out over the next 10 years or so with what can be done with it. When you think about it, you know, the inkjet printer that we're using now was invented in 1976. The laser printer was invented in 1969. It took about 20 years, in other words, for that to become something that you and I have at home and really don't think much about.
Mm.
This technology is going to be the same in about 20 years from now. So we will be able to do 3D architecture. There's been a whole lot of talk and certainly prototype, but nothing built of large scale yet, but we'll be able to build homes using 3D printers as well. And it's quite, I mean, it's difficult to get your head around exactly how you would do it, because you could imagine the printer that would do this would have to be enormous, so I'm not quite sure how we're going to get
well,
there.
Well, knowing me, that the bloody paper would get stuck.
Well, that's true, too. Or it'd run out of ink halfway through. but on the horizon of possibilities, as strange as this may seem, all of these things are being talked about as realities over the next decade or two.
That's just amazing. I love where everything's heading. Maurice, thank you so much for joining us again. In your working life, you actually go out and talk to organisations about this kind of thing, don't you?
I do. So my work is really talking to anybody that needs to understand what tomorrow's going to look like so they can make better decisions, can come up with new products, new innovation, whatever else it is.
How do we find you?
At businessfuturist.com.
Businessfuturist.com. We've got it. Maurice, thank you so much, and I look forward to speaking to you again next week.
A pleasure as always. Have a great week, everyone.
Cheers. Maurice Mizalowski there, our business futurist.